Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lawson. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, one more day left in the Bills minicamp, and we'll talk with offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett about how the minicamp has gone, how E.J. Manuel has looked. Rich Deitch of SportsIllustrated.com joins us at 8 to talk about television and the NFL and what to expect in the next 10 years, and we'll talk about the Washington Redskins controversy with a representative of the Oneida Nation. That's coming up at 8:30.
This place is pandemonium!
At the 10, at the 5, heads to the end. Touchdown, C.J. Spiller. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Van Miller's right. This place is pandemonium right now. It was felt like pandemonium all day, but we're here. We're on the air. We've scrambled together and cobbled together a show, and happy to put it on the air for you tonight, 7 to 9 p.m. Welcome. The Wednesday edition of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Day 2 of the mandatory minicamp for the Buffalo Bills. We're going to recap some of that, talk about what went on out here today. And we want to hear from you as well, as we always do, with the phone lines open. 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. There's one more minicamp practice left tomorrow. And then it's a month off before the players, just about a month, before they report to training camp, St. John Fisher College, on Friday, July 18th. Is that a month? Yeah, it'll be 1 month from tomorrow. So a month off coming up. And last chance to get our initial impressions of the 2014 Buffalo Bills when we watch practice tomorrow. Watched it again today. They moved it up to 12 noon and always have a lot of impressions. We'll get through some of that tonight. We're going to talk with Nathaniel Hackett, the Bills offensive coordinator. He's going to be joining us. We sat down with him after the workout today, and you'll hear that interview coming up at about 7:30 tonight. We're going to talk with a guy, Rich Deitch, from SportsIllustrated.com. He covers media for SI.com, and he wrote an interesting column today for Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback about television, better than the real thing and getting more so every year. Kind of a look ahead at what to expect from NFL TV over the next 10 years or so. And the big ruling today from the U.S. Trademark Office on the Washington Redskins trademark. Basically, they've lost their federal trademark protection. We'll talk with Joel Birkin, who is a representative, a spokesman for the Oneida Nation. He is vice president of communications for the Oneida Nation, right down the road at Turning Stone Casino here in upstate New York. Joel Birkin will join us at 8:30 or so tonight to talk about that. So that's what's coming up. One thing that came out of our discussion with Nathaniel Hackett today, and you heard Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, ask me about it, the pace of the offense, are they still going to run no huddle? Yes, I believe they are. I believe they are committed to it. And we want to know what you think of that, the fast-paced offense. We saw a glimpse of it today at the end of the minicamp session when the Bills ran two sessions of two-minute offense. Basically, that was a game situation, you know, last few minutes of the game situation. But we did see the fast-paced attempt by the Buffalo offense, and it brought to mind what they did last year, what they attempted to do with some degree of success last year running a fast-paced offense. They seem committed to it, running a fast-paced offense. They seem to want to do it. In fact, coming up at the bottom of the hour, you'll hear Nathaniel Hackett reaffirm his commitment to pace and a faster pace as the way to go with this Buffalo offense. We want to hear from you with what you know about the Buffalo offense, E.J. Manuel in his second year, 10 starts under his belt, with how well they run the football, with the weapons they have on offense. Is pace the way to go? Should they stay committed to the no-huddle offense? What do you think about that? I think they should, with the option to switch out of it. I mean, I think ideally, the ideal situation is to have a variable speed offense, to be able to run it at a fast pace, and then when you want to slow it down, have the ability to do that. You would think, with the weapons they have on hand, that the Buffalo Bills are pretty well equipped to do that, to grind out the clock when they have a lead or when they think it's advantageous to get some possession time with the running backs they have. And they have made additions to the offensive line in an effort to do some of that as well. You would think they could run a variable pace offense. Nate Hackett, Nathaniel Hackett, is committed to still having the fast pace, up-tempo offense that they had last year. I believe, came across this stat a couple of times in this offseason, I believe that only the Philadelphia Eagles ran more offensive plays than the Buffalo Bills did last year. There's other factors that go into it, but certainly the intent to run a fast-paced offense was there, and I believe only the Eagles ran more offensive plays than the Bills did last year. Give us your thoughts on that. Should they stay committed to the fast-paced offense that they put on display last year? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Lines are open right now, 803-0550, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Should the Buffalo Bills stay committed to no-huddle offense, to push the pace, and what does that do for them offensively? Let us know what you think, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter, by the way, and the Twitter is at John Murphy Show. Dan Fisher tweets in, no huddle is great if you're a passing team, but if you are 60% run like we are, grinding it out is better. There's a point to be made there. I would agree with that. However, I think the ideal situation is to have both, to be a fast-paced team and maybe start a game that way and then grind it out, move the sticks, burn some clock when it's time to do that. But I see what point he's trying to make there. BDM tweets in, absolutely keep the no huddle, keeps the defense reacting versus dictating to the offense. I think that's true. I think you could, if you can get a defense back on their heels. I recall several conversations last year about this issue with Eric Wood, the Bills center. I think one of the wise old heads, I guess we can call him, on the offensive side of the ball for the Bills. He thought, and I'm sure he still believes this, the key to the Bills' no-huddle offense last year was to get off to a good start and to get that first down, he thought was critical. I can't tell you how many times Eric Wood said that. The critical first down is the first down that the offense gets. It resets everything. Now the defense is back on their heels a little bit. Now you know you can move the ball a little bit. You get that first down, it doesn't guarantee success, but in Eric Wood's mind, it keeps you on the field, keeps you in a frame of mind of success offensively, keeps the defense on the field and maybe starting to think a little bit to themselves, hey, where are we going with this? How are we going to get these guys off the field? And, oh, by the way, are they going to continue to run plays at this up-tempo, fast pace? I think there's a lot of psychological advantage to doing that. Getting that first down, according to Eric Wood, is critical. But not everybody believes that. And we've got phone lines open if you'd like to discuss that. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Some people reaching out on Twitter. Kent Dickerson tweets in, when we asked, should the Bills stay committed to the no-huddle offense, he says, no, slow and steady wins the race. I don't agree with that. I don't think slow and steady wins the race all the time, and I think maybe even less so now in the NFL. Rick Freiheit tweets in, yes, stay with it and build the defense. The defense is pretty good. Jay Hurst tweets, it helps when you have the athleticism we have. No question about that. A couple of new weapons and Sammy Watkins and Mike Williams on the offensive side of the ball, that'll help a lot in keeping the offense on the field. But should they stay committed to the no-huddle pace? Did they handle it okay last year? You wonder how much better off the offense would have looked had E.J. Manuel stayed healthy for all 16 games instead of just the 10 starts he had. I got to believe that that would have made a difference if Manuel got a full complement of games and not just two-thirds of a season. And pace, according to Nate Hackett, does matter. You'll hear him talk about it when we play the interview we did with him today at 7:30 tonight. And Mike Shope made this point too, it's kind of who he is. He's staying true to his principles as an offensive play caller and as a guy who designs offenses. That's what he wants to do. He wants to dictate pace for all of those reasons that we talked about. But what are your thoughts on that? Pace, does it matter for the Buffalo offense? Should they stay committed to the no-huddle offense? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. There are a couple of other tweets, including one that says, keep it, but the Bills need to work on it. Too many quick three and outs last season. That's what Alex Dreyer tweets, too. Not if you go three and out often like last year, put too much on the defense. I'm not sure. I don't have the numbers in front of me where the Bills stand as far as the number of three and out series. But I do think that initial series or two offensively were critical for the Buffalo offense. Critical not to go three and out, because three and out and your first offensive series, you look up and you've burned 45 seconds of possession time. That's not going to get it done. Should the Bills stay committed to the no-huddle offense? A question on the table. You can talk about that or anything else you'd like to talk about with phone lines open, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Mini camp today, day two. The Bills moved up practice. They were on the field for a couple of hours, noon to two. They remain at work here at One Bills Drive with a weightlifting session late in the day and then more team meetings coming up tonight. That's where they're at right now, back in the team meeting room for the next hour or so, and right back at it bright and early tomorrow for the final day of mini camp. Two-minute drill at the end of the workout today. First-team offense against first-team defense. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. They drove into the red zone, but a beautiful interception by Nickell Roby finished off that scoring drive for the Bills. The injuries, well, the people who were absent, Scott Chandler, still excused from minicamp today, was not on hand. Chantrell Henderson was here. He had transportation issues that prevented him from getting here for yesterday's workout, but he was here and got a long look at left tackle. I mean, he took a lot of snaps today, made up for any snaps he may have lost yesterday by not being here. The seventh-round pick, Chantrell Henderson, got an awful long look at practice today. And Cordy Glenn still on the sidelines. He is here, but on the sidelines with an undisclosed illness. As we said, big play by Nickell Roby. Some big plays turned in by rookie linebacker Preston Brown, who was playing in the first-team nickel package. Nickell Roby made the big play to wipe out the one scoring drive, the potential scoring drive in the two-minute drill. And a heavy workload for C.J. Spiller today. He got a lot of carries today. We had a chance after the workout to talk with C.J. Spiller about his minicamp practice today and how the minicamp and OTAs have gone for him.
Just trying to just get better each and every day. Wanted to just try to get some of the things that I can work on, some plays that, you know, I wasn't fully comfortable with. So just kind of wanted to address that today. But from overall, I thought it was a good standpoint from the offensive unit besides the two-minute drill.
No pads, no contact. What do you get out of those drills, these drills?
Well, I mean, you can get your footwork down, alignment, your eye placement, hand placement. So taking mental notes. So it's a lot that you can take out of these OTAs and these mini camps. Without pads, you know, only thing pads do is just, you know, prove, I don't want to say tough man, but, you know, just bring a different element to it. You know, things heat up more. I mean, obviously, you have to get your body used to getting hit again. So, other than that, you're still taking the mental notes.
When you go back today, tonight, look at the video, what would you look for? What do you normally find when you go back and look at the practice video?
I'm going to look at my land course, seeing if I could have pressed the hold longer, how patient I was. Some of my routes, the one route that I had, we talked about on the sideline, seeing if I could have pressed the guy more. So, you know, it's the little things that I can do to help us give us an advantage.
You weren't happy with the two-minute drill?
No. Anytime, you know, it was a chance where we had to, you know, score a touchdown and they get an interception, you lose the game.
And that's kind of replicating game conditions? So.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. You know, we're trying to get in that game setting. That's a situation that we always talk about. And today we fell short.
It you can sense the competitiveness when you get in two-minute drill. The defense wants to win. You guys want to win. Yeah. Sort of ratchets everything up.
It do, and it makes everybody better, and that's what you want. We understand that, you know, we have to take care of each other, but at the same time, you want to compete. And both sides was doing that, and today they just made that play that at the end.
C.J. Spiller, that play at the end was a big one by Nickell Roby. He went up way up. I mean, you know Nickell Roby, how short he is, went way up to come up with the interception on the pass into the end zone, brought it down, came down hard on his back. I think he had the wind knocked out of him for a couple of seconds, but he was fine after that. Big play by Nickell Roby, definitely the play of the game. We'll go through some of the highlights of today's minicamp session coming up in a minute or two. Manny Lawson back for his second day. Lawson obviously skipped the voluntary portion of the organized team activities for a couple of weeks. He's been back now for 2 days and very much enjoying what he's been able to do on the field back with his Buffalo Bills teammates.
It's so much fun. It's almost like we never lost a step. We still kid around. We joke around. We get after each other. We work hard. And, I mean, we have a good time doing it. And, we only have one goal in mind, and that's the way a team should be.
To what degree would you quantify your transition? Everybody's talking about how it's a new scheme with a new coordinator. I don't know that a whole lot changes for you, so maybe just gauge it for us in terms of the transition.
Probably the only thing that's going to change a lot for me now is that I'm not dropping as much. And you know what? I will have my hand in the dirt more, but other than that, the Sam linebacker and the defensive end are relatively the same position. except for a Sam linebacker, you have to drop more on your man-to-man coverage. I don't have to cover anybody man-to-man now. So I just get to go. I see ball, go get ball.
So first day, how comfortable did it feel?
You know what? At first, it was a little, you know, a little nerve-wracking, you know, okay, make sure I get my steps right, I got the proper stance. But after you get going and been doing this for so long, you know, it's all like riding a bike again. And so, you know, you just go out there and make plays.
Manny Lawson, linebacker turned defensive end. Sounds like the transition to defensive end is not going to be that big of a deal for him. Manny Lawson talking to Chris Brown after yesterday's practice. Talking about the Bills, talking about the OTAs and the mini camps, 2 days of mini camps in the books now. You're welcome to join us with phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And talking about Buffalo's no-huddle offense, should the Bills keep doing it this year? Nathaniel Hackett talked to us today and said it's probably going to be the way that they're going. What do you think? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Jeremiah in Binghamton. Jeremiah, you're a fan of the no-huddle offense, are you?
I am, John, yes.
Thanks for coming on the show. Tell us what you think.
Oh, thanks for having me, and just let me say thank you for all your great coverage.
Sure. It's my job, man.
I believe the no-huddle is actually a terrific thing. It gives you the ability to kind of put your opponent down and out before the game really even starts. You can wear the defense down. It's just really a matter of making those completions and, like you said, getting that first down.
That first down, according to Eric Wood, and I see his point, it is critical, I think, just to set the tone on both for your offense and for the defense. I think Eric Wood is dead on when he talks about that first down being the critical first down when it comes to the no huddle.
Absolutely. It's a confidence builder for the offense and hopefully a breath stealer for the defense.
Yeah. All right, Jeremiah, thanks for calling in. We've got phone lines open. Your thoughts on the Bills and, in particular, the question we put out there on the table today. Should the Bills stay in that no-huddle mode offensively this year? Should they scrap it or stay with it? 803-0550, the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach us via Twitter at John Murphy Show. David Caraballo tweets, I think it'll be good later in the season after they've worked their way into it. Got to get CJ rolling first. Okay. CJ CJ didn't have a bad year last year. We'll talk with Nate Hackett about this too. But he wasn't as productive as he was the year before. And with all we know about the dynamic capabilities of CJ Spiller, he could be the answer to the question we had last night for phone calls. Last night we asked, aside from EJ Manuel, who is the next most important piece of the puzzle for the Bills' 2014 season? How about C.J. Spiller? If he gets back to where he was health-wise, if he's productive again, if they can find a way to harness his dynamic playmaking ability, C.J. Spiller might be the next most important piece of the puzzle. I don't know how that got by me yesterday. You heard we talked to C.J. earlier today. He really seems focused, and not that he never was before, but focused and determined to excel. And he was genuinely down about that end zone interception that ended the two-minute drill today. On the question, should the Bills stay in the no-huddle mode? A couple of more tweets. Mike Wakarski, I don't mind the old-fashioned huddle. Gives everyone a bit of a breather and time to think, feedback to the quarterback. That's one argument for it. That's definitely one argument for it. Time to take a breath, time to reset, time for a young quarterback, in this case EJ Manuel, to kind of consider where they are down in distance, get the play call. Hank tweets in, the Bills perfected the no huddle. It is brilliant, and it scares defenses. Hashtag bring it on. I Love Football Bills tweets in, hell yes, they should stay with the no huddle, and I think they will perfect it. Some optimism there. Is the question moot because they are clearly committed to a no-huddle offense? I don't know if it's moot, but it's worth considering should they stay in a no-huddle attack, the Buffalo Bills. Give us your thoughts on that. Phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Well, let's go through kind of a recap of what went on here at day two of the mini-camp session today, this Wednesday afternoon. Warm temperatures, sunshine, and mixed with some clouds on the grass field outside the AdPro Sports Training Center here at One Bills Drive. Thurman Thomas, a visitor on the sidelines today, watched the entire workout. The Hall of Famer stood on the sidelines most of the time with former GM Buddy Nix, who was here. Bills scouts are in the house, too. They must have scouting sessions to get ready for the upcoming season because many, if not most, of the area scouts are here watching the mini-camp workouts. As they did yesterday, early on in the workouts, the offense, the receivers, tight ends, and the quarterbacks went indoors early on to work versus air just to get a little space, and then they returned to the grass field for 7-on-7. Bills had a 3 wideout set early on with Sammy Watkins, Mike Williams, and Chris Hogan working out of the slot. During the 7-on-7, EJ fired a nice pass in traffic, fired it right into the tight end Lee Smith. Jeff Toole made a nice play, a beautiful pass down the middle to the other tight end, one of the other tight ends, Mike Cawson, who got about 20 yards on that play. Again, Cawson getting a chance, Lee Smith getting a chance, Chris Gregg getting a chance to show what he can do with Scott Chandler out the second straight day. They worked into 11-on-11, then starting at the 30-yard line. Of note, Chantrell Henderson, seventh-round draft pick, getting lots of work at left tackle with the first team. Missed yesterday, in there a lot today at left tackle. Chris Williams stayed in there at left guard on the offensive line. Eric Wood at center. Chris Hairston at right guard for the second consecutive day. He may have found a home there. They're not saying anything official. We'll ask Nathaniel Hackett about it coming up. But Hairston getting a lot of work at the guard position. And Eric Pierce working at right tackle. On the defensive side of the ball, Keith Rivers stays in there as one of the outside linebackers, Kiko Alonso on the other side, and Brandon Spikes in the middle. As they work through the 11-on-11, EJ had a couple of nice dump-off passes to C.J. Spiller over the middle. With the second unit, Thad Lewis, the quarterback, they had Cyrus Kwanjo in at right tackle, Doug Ligurski handling the snapping duties at center. Then when the first team offense got back on the field in 11-on-11, EJ Manuel threw a nice pass for about 10 yards to Robert Woods crossing over the middle, but it was broken up by linebacker Ty Powell. A great play by young linebacker Ty Powell. Next play, cornerback blitz. EJ with a quick delivery, and he hits Woods down the left side. A nice spin move after the catch for Robert Woods, and he picked up about 15 yards. Still in 11-on-11, EJ with a good pass over the middle to Tony Moiaki. Jeff Toole got some reps today. Actually, probably, I didn't count him, but he probably had more reps today than Thad Lewis as the backup to E.J. Manuel. And during this session of 11-on-11, Toole threw a nice pass down the middle and a nice leaping grab by the other tight end we mentioned, Chris Gregg. That one picked up about 20 yards. Then later on, E.J. out of the shotgun, looked right, had time to scan the field, and finally found Sammy Watkins open down the left sideline. A perfect pass, a gain of about 30 yards on the play, E.J. to Sammy Watkins. One more session of 11-on-11. They mix in some special teams work in here as well, but during the next session of 11-on-11, EJ threw a pass down the left side to Robert Woods down the left sideline for about 20 yards. Woods made a great adjustment coming back to haul it in, going down to his knees to haul it in as the pass was a little bit low. Special team session, field goal with kicks by Dan Carpenter, hit a 31-yarder, missed a 33-yarder, and then was perfect. From 36, from 39, from 41, from 45, and from 47 yards, a field goal session for special teams. Back to 11-on-11, EJ with a nice sideline pass to Robert Woods that picked up 18 yards. And then they went in the two-minute offense towards the end of the practice. They started at the 30-yard line, two timeouts needing a touchdown with 2 minutes on the clock. One of the big plays, EJ, a nice pass over the middle, perfectly thrown to Chris Hogan. They blew the play dead. Nathaniel Hackett will tell you that Hogan would have made it to the end zone, but they blew the play dead. So now there's about 1 minute left at the 20-yard line going in. Actually, the 28-yard line going in with a timeout. Now 55 seconds left, the second and 10. And they got a couple of yards on a run by C.J. Spiller. And then it was third and 3 at the 20 with 52 seconds left. A 4-yard sideline catch to Chris Hogan. He got out of bounds, stopped the clock with 36 seconds left at the 15-yard line. First down there. This is the 2-minute drill. E.J. Kind of flushed out of the pocket, ran a little bit, and was sacked. They had to call his final timeout, picked up, I don't know if it was a sack, he probably picked up 2 or 3 yards. Second and 12 at the 18 with 24 seconds left. EJ on another scramble, picked up some yardage. Third and 10 at the 18-yard line, clock running down. EJ pressured and threw an incompletion. A lot of pressure coming from Jerry Hughes today. He had another outstanding day. He's been one of the standouts, I think, Jerry Hughes, of OTAs and the minicamp so far, the two sessions. And finally, the big play, fourth and 12 at the 16-yard line going in, 2 seconds on the clock. EJ fired a pass to the end zone looking for Robert Woods. Nickell Roby made a spectacular leaping interception and came down with it. He got the wind knocked out of him as he came down hard, but just a great play by Nickell Roby, the play of the day. They restarted the two-minute drill with Thad Lewis at quarterback at the 30-yard line. Lewis hit a nice second-down pass to Chris Gregg for about 6 yards, threw a deep pass over the middle that was intercepted eventually by the safety Jonathan Meeks, ending the practice session. Some good work in the two-minute drill for the Buffalo Bills today. The defense, with especially the Roby interception, with some good moments, but the two-minute drill wasn't bad, and as you'll hear Nate Hackett say, it was much better than it was the last time they worked on it during the OTAs. Call here from Alex in Utica. Hi, Alex. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Okay.
All right. I just wanted to get your take on something.
how does Sammy Watkins look in person? Like, does he look like a guy that's worth two first-round draft picks? Like, you usually see a stud like that.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see him in pads. You want to see him in a real game situation, but he looks very, very good. He works really hard on his route running. You've heard the stories, I presume, of him coming in early to work on his route running. You can see him not struggle with the precision needed, but definitely he pays attention to his steps and to the precision that he needs to run his routes on. But he looks good. I think he looks... every bit the first-round draft pick, is he worth two? I mean, who knows? He's going to have to produce a lot to say that. But he looks clearly I think it's not a stretch to say that he's the most talented receiver on the roster right now, and that's before he even plays a game, just because of his ability to find the ball, to get the ball, to snatch the ball out of the air, his ability to catch the ball when it's not perfectly thrown, which is a big issue. And as I said, he is very much interested in improving his route running and getting to an NFL precision level when it comes to route running. So they're not going to find any fault with his work ethic. So how does he look? So far, so good. With a lot, I think, a lot of room to grow for Sammy Watkins. That would be my take. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to be playing you an interview that we did today with Nathaniel Hackett, the Bills' offense coordinator. We sat down with him after today's OTA session, and we'll get his thoughts on Sammy Watkins and Mike Williams, the receiving core, the running backs, and especially E.J. Manuel. Nathaniel Hackett, when we return, it is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Day two of the Bills Day two of the Bills minicamp. One more day to come. And then, as we said, a month away from training camp. Can you believe that? Month from tomorrow, Bills report, July 18th to St. John Fisher College. It's coming up fast. Hey, we've been talking tonight about the Bills no huddle. We're going to hear from offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett in a moment. Should the Bills stay in no huddle this year? They ran it a lot last year. Should they stay in the no huddle as they move through the next season? A couple of people called in, and you can call in if you'd like, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Those lines are open right now. And a couple of people have tweeted in, including James Patton, who says, depends on if EJ improves on his reads and progressions. Could hurt if he's not completely comfortable in the offense. That's true. No huddle or not, he's got to be comfortable and improve on his reads and progressions. He's got to make quicker decisions, I've said for a while. Adrian tweets in, you have to move the ball in order for no huddle to work or you kill your defense. That's sort of a chicken and egg. Maybe you can move the ball better if you're running no huddle, a little bit better anyway. Kevin Wilson's tweet, faster pace only helps when they score. If not, then it hurts the team. I don't know if I agree with that. Faster pace can help if you're moving the ball and keeping the other team defense on the field and tiring them out. Obviously, you want to score. Obviously, that's the goal. But I don't know that faster pace necessarily hurts if you don't score every time. William Bolton tweets, instead of phoning in, I'll say now, no huddle. Coach Marone knows what he's doing. Michael Frontudo tweets, quarterback does not have enough skill yet to run a no huddle. I think E.J. Manuel showed last year that he can handle no huddle. Was he perfect? No. I don't think it had really a whole lot to do with the pace of the offense last year, more with the way he played. And as I said, the decisions that he made and some of the throws that he was unable to make. But I don't know the pace hurt E.J. Manuel last year in the 10 starts he had. Well, what about the pace? What about the quarterback? What about the rest of the Buffalo offense? After today's second minicamp session, we had a chance to sit down with the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, Nathaniel Hackett, in his second year. The Bills' passing game, no huddle or not, the Bills' passing game was ranked just around 28th last year in the NFL, about fifth from the bottom, not good. We asked Nathaniel Hackett if, how much will it improve this year with E.J. Manuel, and how will the pass offense improve this year? What's the goal to try to get this passing offense going?
I think the biggest thing is always the quarterback. I mean, when you get a quarterback in his second year and keeping the same quarterback throughout the year, yeah. I think that's going to dramatically help us. I think being familiar with the system, being familiar with the guys that he's been out there with, that's going to dramatically help him also. And just because he's always going to have that confidence. It's not going to be something new to him. He's going to understand his reads. He's going to be able to focus on the details, focus on how the defense is responding, and he's going to be able to go about that the right way and just slowly take what he's given. I mean, we watch a lot of guys in the offseason, seeing that's what great quarterbacks do. They take what they're given, and that's something that EJ just has to keep learning and keep trusting.
Have you seen signs through the OTAs and the mini camp that EJ is making progress?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the good thing is that you see the initial, okay, he sees it, and then if it, he, you can see him actually recognize that it's not there, and then finding a running back, he did it a couple times today, he did it a couple times a couple days ago. I mean, it's as he feels comfortable in understanding, that's good. It's good to give it to a running back. That'll allow you to now know when somebody's open down the field, because it'll be even clearer and you're making them cover CJ and Fred and Booby and all those guys.
EJ, yesterday talking to the media, made mention of how he's got to have precise footwork to make it link up, you know, with the footwork of the receivers. And what's the margin for error on that? I mean, you want you get precise as you can, but how precise does it have to be?
He'll correct himself on probably a 3-inch error of a step. I mean, just the other day, he threw a route, and he had a little extra 3 inches within his first step, what we call a hitch. So he hitches up, and he had a little extra tiny 3-inch baby hitch, and he was late, and Robert caught the ball and was out of bounds. And the next day we came back with the exact same thing to Robert, or form of it, and he went back perfectly fluid, hitched up once, threw it, and it was about as good as it possibly can get. So I think him realizing that that's something, a tool that we're giving him to understand how fast the ball should be out and how comfortable and in rhythm that he should get that thing out is when he's going to get better and better, and he's feeling that. That's the other thing about going on year two. That was something when I told him that was brand new for him. He had never heard anybody, you know, hey, it's this. It's now it's like he comes back and says, oop, I had a little extra hitch. That's why I was late. I got to get it out.
Are there many quarterbacks who come out of college with that kind of precision in their game? Are there any?
I mean, everybody just kind of coaches different. Everybody has different philosophies. I go back old school to those days with the Bill Walshes and my dads and all those guys and Coach Holmgren, all those, Mike McCarthy, all those guys that are there. It's about rhythm. It's just a different way how you want to talk with the quarterback.
How does adding, you know, the skill set of Sammy Watkins and Mike Williams, how does that help your passing game moving forward?
Oh, I think anytime you can bring extra wide receivers in here to bring competition, I mean, all those guys have done a nice job being able to get TJ rolling and Robert and all those guys. It's always going to give you another dimension, because another guy that somebody's going to have to worry about, that's a playmaker. Anytime you can put playmakers out there, it's better for all of us.
Last year, you ran plays at a pretty fast pace. There were times later in the season when injuries piled up, you maybe couldn't run them as quickly as you wanted to. With the depth that you have now on offense, is there maybe less of a chance that could happen, that the pace of your offense might not be as compromised as much if you do have a couple of injuries?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you look at it last year, and we were putting guys in that had were playing their very first NFL game of their life, and we were trying to press people and utilize that. And I think now the quarterbacks that we have in that room have been with us for a year now. So I think that for them to be able to go out there, that's going to be just that starting point right there to say they're going to be able to, that's going to be comfortable for them. It's not going to be something, not only is it a new system, but it's not only a new time out on the field, but it's, hey, now this is what they do. This is what they've been training for. This is what they've been doing. It's part of them. And I think that's going to allow us not to have to slow it down as much. I mean, when Dad went in, when Jeff went in, it was, you know, that was their first game ever. And I think that anytime you do that, just like the first game with EJ, we wanted to, you know, make it a nice relaxed pace, and then we sped it up as he was in there for those first couple games. So I think anytime you have that quarterback that's rolling for a while, you can always keep the pace up.
And how important is pace to your offense?
I think quite a bit. I think quite a bit, because you want to get those guys in a flow. You know, it's their game out there, and you want them to get a feel for how defenses are playing them. The linemen to understand how to block guys, the pass rush to slow down because they're having to rush the passer so much. So I think that is such a key thing, and anytime you can utilize a no-huddle aspect anywhere, it's always going to be helpful to you.
At running back, you've added Bryce Brown, you've added Booby Dixon. How does that enhance what you might be able to do offensively?
A lot. I mean, anytime you add, just like I said with the wide receivers, anytime you add more playmakers, both those guys have opportunities to make plays. Different kinds of guys. One's a big hard-nosed downhill guy. The other guy's a nifty quick guy, and those are all things that defenses are going to have to plan for. So the more guys you can have on the team and the more guys that the defense might possibly have to prepare for, the better advantage that we're going to have.
There were a lot of expectations going into last year for C.J. Spiller, and, of course, the high ankle sprain, the injury sort of hampered him. Can he return to, like, the Pro Bowl form he had in 2012? And what have you seen through OTAs and minicamp?
I'll tell you, it's wild. C.J.'s done a great job just coming back from that. And just working extra hard. I mean, he really has. I mean, just his finish, just even when he takes a check down, how he bursts, every single thing that he's doing is so much more, just so much more intensity. And I think that he wants to get back to where he was. And it's funny because he didn't have that bad of a year even last year,
right?
And he missed out on a game and all that kind of stuff and was hindered by that. And he still had over 900 yards. So I think that him being healthy and him being more familiar with the system, what we're asking him to do, he's going to be more and more comfortable, just like all the other guys are going to be.
I know you were looking for more red zone production from what you had last year. What kind of confidence do you have in your being able to do that this year?
Oh, gosh. I mean, red zone's one of those things. I mean, anytime you get in the red zone, it's the hardest place in the world to score because it's a shorter field and the defense is – everything happens faster. The defense is tighter. They're not worried about the deep ball. So I think that anytime – you just got to keep practicing that over and over and over. And you don't – the reads happen quickly. Quicker. So I think the more that everybody's in there, the better we're going to get. Just like anything, the more we can practice that, and we're going to make a big emphasis on that as we move forward. Red zone. Because you're not. It's one of those things. You're not down there a lot, but when you're down there, that's when it counts more than anything. So I just think the guys need to keep on working hard on that one, and that's a huge emphasis for us as we move forward. Just like third down, we need to continue drives as much as possible.
You've added two coaches to the offensive staff, Coach Downing and Coach Hostler. What have they done? And the way you structure practice and the way you've made it through the OTAs and minicamp, and specifically, what have they been able to do with E.J. Manuel?
Oh, they've been awesome. I mean, both of those guys have been such a great addition. Just for me, just to have guys that I can talk to about the pass game, about wide receiver play, about quarterbacks, about running back, all that stuff. It's just extra guys that can push me and ask me questions and make me question the system and say, hey, how can I make that thing better? Because you never want to be stagnant in anything that you do. And I think for me, I always want to push myself. I always want to get better. And I think a guy like Haas that's won a Super Bowl, that's been around for years, is unbelievable for what we're trying to do. And then at the same time, you have Todd Downing, a guy that's coached a quarterback, been successful. I mean, Matthew Stafford is a very good football player. And just to bring that helps EJ so much. It takes a little bit off of me, so I can work on the whole offense instead of just one individual guy. And I think that I still can get my hand in there with the quarterbacks and at the same time just kind of coordinate and bring everything together. And that's the big part of it. We got to make everybody accountable, and that's one of my big goals.
And the last question, Coach, deals with – we're back to EJ. You know, everybody knows that EJ is sort of the key man as far as the success of the offense, maybe of the whole team. What key strides does he have to make this year to ensure the kind of success that you're all looking for?
I'll tell you, the big thing for him, I mean, any team that you're at, it's going to be about the quarterback.
Right.
The quarterback's always, he touches the ball every single time, and he's got to make those good decisions. I think the big thing for EJ is not to let it get to him, not let that pressure get to him. Understand that he's going to make plays because he's a very gifted person, very gifted athlete, and he's very smart. He's worked so hard. And he just don't do too much. Just work within the system and trust it and evolve and get better and better, because there are going to be some times we are going to have to lean on him in some critical situations like last year. And there's going to be times when he's going to allow to turn around and hand that ball off to one of those horses in the backfield. So I think it's one of those things is don't do too much. Just work within the system and just keep moving the chains. Keep on moving the chains, wearing down the defense, and then those great plays are going to happen. So I think just as he gets familiar with it and gets more confidence, that's when he's going to be better and better.
Nathaniel Hackett, Bills offensive coordinator, talking about a variety of topics. We had a chance to sit down with him after today's practice, and you heard him say it. He said it twice at the beginning of the interview and at the end of the interview. The key is EJ Manuel. The key is the quarterback. He's the guy who touches the ball. There's no shying away from that among the Bills. You know, they're not running away from that. They know it. All the fans know it. About pace, about the no-huddle attack, you heard what a fan he is of no-huddle, of dictating pace, and how important he considers it to be moving forward. And I think he makes a good point about the fact that he's got now three quarterbacks, and in some respects, Dennis Dixon, too, who was here for, what, about half a season last year. But at least the main three who were here all of last regular season, Jeff Toole, Thad Lewis, E.J. Manuel. So he's worked with them. He knows that they know what he's looking to do offensively. You couldn't say that last year. He had E.J. coming in as a rookie. He had Thad Lewis, who came in late in the preseason, a week or so before the regular season, had to start after a couple of weeks. He had Jeff Toole, who was thrown into the fire. He had to start a game as well. And he was a rookie who just came, you know, during the rookie minicamp. So he's had an entire offseason to work with these guys. And I think he feels like the no-huddle will be much more effective with these quarterbacks now that they've spent a year in the system. But it's worth debating, I think. It's worth talking about. Should they stay with the no-huddle or not? Let us know what you think. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. We're toll-free from outside Buffalo. The number to call is 1-888. 550-2550, and you can reach out and on Twitter and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Still some tweets about this. Should they stay with the no huddle or not? Scott Polichet just tweets in, don't care, just win. Classic tweet. Don't care, just win. Steve Simons tweets in, Packers run it a lot. I like it only after the offense gets a first down on the drive. Give the defense a rest and three and out. Yeah. Okay, that's a point there. But you may want to phone in your thoughts. No huddle. Do the Bills stay with it? Do they shift out of it moving forward into the upcoming year? You heard what Nathaniel Hackett thinks about it. Let us know what you think. Phone lines open at 803-0550. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk some more. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hey, next week, we got a big show coming up next Monday night, June 23rd. We are going to be doing the show live at the NOCO Express Store, Main Street, Youngs Road in Williamsville. That's right, next Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. And our special guest will be Bills running back Fred Jackson. Fred will be there from 6:30 p.m. until 8 o'clock. He'll be ready to sign autographs. You should bring your favorite Bills item for Fred to sign. Limit one item per person. And bring questions. We can get you on the air if we like your question, if you want to talk about it on the air. Billy Buffalo will be joining us there as well. Next Monday night, June 23rd, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, presented from NOCO at the NOCO Express Store, Main and Youngs in Williamsville. Take a break, come back, and we'll talk about the NFL on TV, what to expect 10 years from now. Rich Deitch of SportsIllustrated.com will be on the line with us live. Another hour to go, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like this kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Day two of the Buffalo Bills minicamp. We'll get back to some of the news of that today. And we're going to talk about the Washington Redskins situation later on this hour with spokesman for the Oneida Nation, the Vice President of Communications, Joel Barkin, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. But a really interesting article on the Sports Illustrated website, Peter King's website, MMQB, written by a guy who used to cover the Buffalo Bills way back when. Rich Deitch is a writer, reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com. He writes the extremely popular media circus column on SI.com every week, and he joins us on the line right now. Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, John. It's been a long time since we saw each other in person, but I'm a UB graduate and always have great fondness for Buffalo. Probably my second favorite city behind New York.
Yeah, you covered the team while you were here, the Bills, for Associated Press, I believe, right?
Well, I was strung for them a little bit, but okay. It was a big weekly up there, Metro Community News. I don't even know if it still exists.
Yeah.
But during the I was there during the glory days of Kelly, Paul, Andre Reed. It was, for being like 20, 21, 20 years old, they're covering that team. And such a great team. It was just an unbelievable ride.
Yeah. I got to tell you, and this is going to, this is a compliment, but Monday mornings, part of my annual or weekly Monday ritual is to read Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback, and over the last 6 months or so, to read your Media Circus, which deals with much more than the NFL. It really is a must reading for me, and I really appreciate the work that goes into that, Rich.
I appreciate it. A very big difference of salary structure between me and Peter King, but I appreciate that, John.
Yeah, but it is good, and if folks who have not been exposed to it, the idea is you just kind of compile everything about sports media in a weekly snapshot, right, once a week.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the idea is, and I kind of stole it from King, it's really to do multiple items on multiple different things when it comes to the sports media. So it can be anything from examining, let's say, ESPN's NBA Countdown, to giving a sense of what the World Cup ratings are, to just my own take on something I see online, to something I see on television, listen to on the radio. It's, you know, there's so much media basically being consumed in this country that, you know, it's pretty much impossible to cover all of sports media, but the idea is basically to give people a real snapshot of what is currently going on in the sports media with the same kind of construct that Peter King does in his Monday Morning Quarterback.
And another reason why I love your Media Circus column every week is that you deal with some of the best non-sports pieces of journalism that are out that week. I can't tell you how many times you've directed me to some article or some sort of story that I never would have come across on my own.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, one of my favorite things in the world to do is read. I'm reading all the time, whether it's the New York Times, The Economist, or The Atlantic. You know, I'm a pretty voracious reader. It's kind of one of the things I love to do. And that's what's great about Twitter, is that now that provides you with a, you're essentially your own distribution engine to pass along stuff. And pretty much everything that I pass along during the week, I'll go back on Saturday night or Sunday morning, take a look at that, and that's how I sort of compile what I think is the best journalism of the week. The one thing that's very clear, John, is that especially with the web today, there's probably never been a better time for good journalism. Even as newspapers fold and the industry is in trouble, there's really a lot of good work being done across the country.
Rich Deitz is our guest. He is a media reporter, a writer reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com. You also go to great lengths to poke fun and maybe even more than poke fun at Skip Bayless and some of the guys at ESPN. I have to admit, I enjoy that. I enjoy when people poke the tiger that ESPN has become.
John, I will say this. I was just about to say you enjoy Skip Bayless.
No.
So I was going to say,
no.
There is one thing that is a flaw with you, John. Now, Skip Bayless is, you know, he really is one of the great, in my opinion, con men and charlatans of all time, in that he has, he is really part of a show that has almost perfected this idea of disagreement as entertainment.
Yeah.
And I would sort of claim that it's an absolute falsehood, and that you'll see Bayless, almost like a WWE wrestling character, basically take viewpoints and say things merely only to draw attention to himself as well as to draw attention to the show. I mean, at a certain point, it defies logic when a human being sort of says something to the effect of, you know, I'd rather take Tim Tebow over Tom Brady, or LeBron James doesn't have the clutch gene, whatever that nonsense kind of term is.
Yeah.
But I got to give Bayless credit. He's, you know, he's making over $1 million at ESPN. The show's ratings for the morning are really good. About 400,000 people watch that show every day. So I would imagine the last laugh is on him, but it literally is like watching a monorail salesman every morning try to sell people on a monorail. It's unbelievable.
And you, I think, and I maybe share the same opinion on ESPN in general. Over the years, recent years in particular, it's pretty transparent attempt in many instances by ESPN to just create points of controversy, whether it's Tim Tebow or Michael Sam or Ron Jaworski saying
right,
in the run-up to the draft about Johnny Manziel. They'll take that and get hours and hours of programming out of something that one of their people said. It's almost insanity.
It is insanity, and what would be more honest and transparent is to say, you know what, we are intentionally using one of our analysts to create news, as opposed to the opposite when they say we don't manufacture news and we don't manufacture controversy, because it's just, the fact is, it's just simply not true. The Jaworski example is the perfect example. Jaworski comes on and says that Colin Kaepernick, in his opinion, he could be the best quarterback of all time, or he's the best quarterback in the NFL. So then ESPN.com takes what Jaworski says on the air, turns that into a story, and then ESPN2 and ESPN Radio spend all day debating whether that is a true fact or not. Then you have other, you know, because ESPN dictates the conversation in this country, then you have other sports talk radio stations around the country. You have other bloggers weighing in on this topic, and that essentially is how ESPN, from one analyst, has created the news. The only thing you kind of hope, and you really hold your hat, and you hope it's honest, is you hope someone like Jaworski is telling the truth. Knowing Ron, I believe he believes that. That's the difference with Bayless. I don't believe for a second that Bayless believes 50% of the things he says. I think he's just smart enough to know that the more outlandish I can be, the more attention I'll get.
What are we going to do about this, Rich, from a sports media perspective? I worry about that sometimes.
What we're going to do is watch ESPN continue to cash $6 billion checks, John. We're not honestly doing anything about it. You know, the fact is, that network has a dominance over every other sports network, and it's not going to change. I mean, the business model itself is genius in that not only do they get more $5 and a little bit more than $5, whatever it is these days, $5.55 or something like that, per subscriber for everyone who gets ESPN on cable, but they also have an advertising model. So every, you know, they also get money from the advertisers who advertise on ESPN. Mm-hmm. So it's called a dual revenue stream. It's an incredible business model. So basically, I mean, I hate to say it, they're essentially a monopoly in sports, even though Fox Sports 1, NBC Sports Network, et cetera, exists. So the only way that really can change is if ESPN, which does, by the way, I would say a lot of great work on a daily basis, mm-hmm. is if, I always say, if the good angels of ESPN on any given day beat the bad angels, it's a good day. But sometimes it's the nonsense factory which, you know, becomes the dominant storyline of the day, and that's when you see, like, you know, ESPN.com, every ESPN station, ESPN radio, you know, do these absurd debates like, you know, is LeBron James a clutch player? Blah, you know, is LeBron James tough? I mean, it's the kind of stuff that any sports fan with average sort of intelligence is like, yeah, LeBron James has been a clutch player. LeBron James is tough. But, you know, we kind of live in an argument culture, and a lot of times ESPN takes advantage of that.
We're on the line with Rich Deitch. He is a writer, reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com. And the real reason we wanted to get you on the show tonight, Rich, was to talk about your column, which is up on Peter King's MMQB. Television, better than the real thing and getting more so every day. Television in the NFL. In many respects, many people believe it is better than the real thing, and the league's worried about that, aren't they?
They are, and they should be, because you know, the fact is, John, the home experience now with HD, with NFL, things like NFL Red Zone, with Fantasy Stat, you know, with, I mean, think about the Red Zone channel. The Red Zone channel is essentially geared towards your fantasy football team, where you can basically watch that and in real time essentially know how you are doing every week in fantasy football, you know, presuming obviously you have your computer or your laptop or tablet there tabulating your scores. But it's the real problem the NFL has is, and doing this story for Peter King's site, and talking to a lot of fans, as even there's really nothing the NFL can do to kind of duplicate the comfort factor of watching the NFL in your own home. So even if you really love the idea of being at a stadium, you generally speaking have to travel to the stadium. You don't have the same amenities in the stadium, whether it's food, whether it's generally Wi-Fi that you would have at your home. In certain cities, obviously like Buffalo, when it gets later in the year, you have to deal with the elements. And Bills fans are amazing, but, you know, having been at some games at the old Rich Stadium, which were like negative 10 degrees, it's not an easy place to be in November and December. So there are so many things that the NFL in-game experience is a negative compared to the NFL home experience, that the league is thinking about this. The league is worried, but the league is also has a bit of a problem here, John, because the fact is what drives the NFL is the money that they get from these networks. You know, whatever it is these days, $6 billion basically in fees from the networks. It may be, as some analysts would project, $17 million 10 years from now. So they need television, and they need television to put on an incredible product, an incredibly great HD product, which television is doing. But at the same time, that product, I think, has become so great that it does eliminate some of the reason to go to the game, unless you really are just, you know, an ultimate diehard who just wants to be in the stadium. I mean, John, I know you've done Bills games for a long time. I might even argue at this point, maybe people are actually attending the games almost for the tailgating experience,
yeah,
more than the in-game experience. Because to be quite blunt, having, you know, covered a million NFL games, the television experience is like 500 times better just from a visual purpose than if you're in the stadium where you can't see everything.
Right. A quote that you got from a Pittsburgh area NFL fan, a guy named Puck. I forget his first name.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, Michael Puck, who says, "You could not pay me to go to the games." That just jumps off the page at you.
It does. And the one thing with Michael Puck, and I would imagine that your listeners can appreciate this and identify with this as well, is Michael Puck has two little kids. And so I think once you become a parent and once you have kids, it becomes even that much harder to take your kids to the game. One, it's extra tickets. Two, obviously, you got to feed them. And there are some places where it's, you know, it could get a little rough for little kids depending on what the environment is. So, you know, Michael Puck, I think, just sort of expressed the opinion that probably a lot of, like, you know, 30-something guys have. It's like it's just too much of a hassle to head out and go to the game when literally I have everything that I could ever possibly need in the comfort of my own home.
And the TV experience, as good as it is now and as attractive as it is now to NFL fans sitting at home, it's going to get better. In fact, you kind of project out over the next 10 years. You say that the picture itself will probably be sharper, better in the years ahead?
Yeah, in talking to like the tech side people of television networks, they would predict that whatever you think HD is now, the screen will get four times better or possibly even eight times better over the next 10 years. That technology is coming. It's pretty much, I think, four times, or 4K basically they call it, is already out there. You're seeing that at some of like the electronic shows, which have the most advanced technology. So that'll, I mean, viewers will be able to probably buy those kind of TVs, I would think, in the next 1 to 4 years. So think about that. Think about how good HD technology is now, and then magnify that by you'll be able to see the screen four times better. Some of these other TV experts talk to a producer. The guy actually does Sunday Night Football, most popular show on television. He believes they're going to get to a point where cameras are going to be so good and so many cameras will be placed on the field that you will be able to digitally remove people from a replay where, let's say, for instance, a quarterback breaks the plane of the goal line. You can't sort of see it perfectly because there's defenders there. He believes you'll be able to digitally remove those defenders so the people at home will be able to clearly see whether the quarterback crossed the line or not. And then there are other people, and I think they're totally right about this too. You as a viewer at home, you may be able to actually basically control every camera you want. So you'll have choice of 100 cameras, let's say, from your laptop, and you'll be able to watch the game from any angle, whether it's, let's say, the top of the stadium to linebacker cam. So think about that. You could literally, if you want, I would guess 10 years from now, you'll be able to watch the game from the quarterback's viewpoint. A quarterback has a little like pencil camera in his helmet or something like that, and you can watch the entire game from the quarterback's viewpoint. So I think all this, I should say all of this, but I think a lot of this kind of stuff is coming in the next decade.
You know, wasn't it CBS or one of the broadcasters for the NCAA basketball tournament this year experimented with kind of a home team concept when
Correct.
It came to announcers? Do you see that in the future for NFL TV?
I absolutely do. The only tricky thing there, I think, will be that the networks have their contract, and it's, you know, the NFL is national as opposed to local. So you do wonder if whether it's CBS, whether it's NBC, whether it's Fox, et cetera, would allow that. What I do think will happen, though, is I think you'll see something that the ESPN did for the MegaCast, where they had the all 22 cameras, which is like the cameras that the coaches use to see every player on an NFL field. And I think you would be able to get that broadcast where you have ex-coaches basically watching the game from the all-22 camera, and if you're watching that telecast, they're basically giving you like a coach's X's and O's seminar as opposed to like the traditional game broadcast. So that will be something for like the really hardcore X's and O's football junkies who want to watch a game with coaches as opposed to the traditional broadcast. That's something I definitely think is going
to
come.
You talked to Fred Gaudelli, the producer for NBC Sunday Night Football. He talked about, in the future, even practices being broadcast. We do a lot of that on our website right now, buffalobills.com, as far as showing practice highlights. I could see people would watch that. People would watch Buffalo Bills practices every day.
If the Bills made the full practice available, now obviously the downside, I guess, for the Bills would be, you know, those tapes are going to get around to opposing teams. But there is no doubt in my mind, if there was, let's say, I'm just making this up, there's a subscription where you as a Bills fan, you have to pay, let's say, $100 a year, and you get every practice, either you can watch that live or you can watch a tape of that later that night because you subscribe to this service. I believe that would be incredibly successful for almost every NFL team, because that's the kind of stuff that fans, generally speaking, never get to see. So if you're a diehard fan of a team, and you could, even if it was, I would almost say, even if you did that once a week, where once a week you basically could watch the hour practice, I think NFL teams would absolutely make revenue on that. The question would be there, John, to me, would be like competitive advantage. Is it worth the revenue that you'll make as a league to take away the competitive advantage? Because I would think a lot of coaches, if they know the practice is available and being taped, my guess is they probably would. It'd be one of those fake practices that we often see like at the Final Four.
Hey, Rich, when we started doing this show 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago now, people would ask me, what are you going to talk about 365 days a year, 52 weeks a year? We got no problem with that. And the question comes up, Where does it end? How I mean, it's almost like the Mark Cuban question, you know? How much more saturation can the NFL have? What do you think?
I don't think we've hit the apex, because I think the sport is basically, it's sort of, you know, this is not to make religion sound trite, but it is really one of the closest things to religion that we have in this country. It's really a perfect kind of television media sport. It's once a week, so every game is almost like a playoff game. It's not like the baseball season where it's 162 games. I mean, it's a realistic 16 game season. So, you know, it's like the games sort of feel like they're important. And, you know, there are still, John, there have still been days of the week which they can take advantage of. You know, Thursday Night Football has existed now, I want to say, for like 8 years, but it's been on the NFL Network, essentially. You know, it used to be on Turner TNT way back in the day.
Right.
But essentially, if you didn't get the NFL Network, you were shut out from the NFL on Thursday night. This year, that totally changes. The games will now be on CBS. My sense is that those games will go up from 8 million to like 16 million. So when you talk about where does it end, this year is a perfect example. The NFL is going to get its product to 8 million more people every Thursday because of one little tweak. You know, you want to even think about some other tweaks? They could, if they really wanted to. They have enough programming to make the draft 4 or 5 days,
yeah,
as opposed to a 3-day draft, because the ratings have proved that people want them. So, you know, maybe one day there'll be a saturation point, but every metric says the NFL interest still is going up.
It's fascinating to watch. Rich, we thank you very much for coming on the show tonight to talk with us about it. Great work on the Media Circus column, and I really did enjoy this MMQB column today, too, as well. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, John.
That is Rich Deitch. He is a writer-reporter for Sports Illustrated and SI.com, and on Peter King's MMQB column today, he writes, television, better than the real thing and getting more so every year. Kind of a look ahead at what to expect from the NFL and NFL coverage on television, network television, and satellite TV as well. With a couple of anecdotal stories about a couple of amazing fans, maybe they're out there in our audience. I mentioned Michael Puck from the North Hills area of Pittsburgh, who is a Bengals fan, who, as his quote said, he would never think of going to a game. You could not pay me to go to games. He's got 2 75-inch TVs mounted side-by-side on the wall of his basement, subscription to DirecTV Sunday Ticket. And another fan that Rich talked to, Gordy Brown from Florida, who's got a 75-inch HD TV that he watches. He's got a 50-inch HD TV right next to it, tuned to the Red Zone channel, so he can keep an eye on his fantasy football. And then he's got a 46-inch HD TV, which he tunes to the best NFL game on TV every Sunday, a fourth 32-inch HD TV, and a fifth TV in case people who are at his house are rooting for a particular team. And, of course, he watches, he pays attention to the NFL on his tablet, too, his iPad.
It's a sports bar.
He's got a sports bar in his house, this guy. And, oh, by the way, he's got a projection screen poolside. He lives in Florida, so he can sit in the pool and watch NFL football as well.
Do you have his address? Better make friends with this guy, huh?
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine.
There are people like this, and there are probably people like this in Buffalo who have maybe not as elaborate setups, but the question has fascinated me for the last couple of years since we've been doing this show. Where is the, you know, where does it end? When do we reach the end of the line as far as interest in the NFL? As you heard Rich say, not likely that it's going to be very soon anyway. I would invite you to take a look at this column, Television, Better Than the Real Thing, Getting More So Every Year. It's on Peter King's excellent website, mmqb.si.com. Rich Deitch, who covered the Bills for a while, not too long ago. Let's take squeeze in a call here from Christopher in Buffalo. Hi, Christopher. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Another show, by the way.
Thank you.
Well, there's a couple different options. One, maybe have, like, if you want to, you know, save the NFL game day experience, Wi-Fi accessible only if you're at the stadium with, like, different camera angles.
Uh-huh.
You've got to bring your tab, yep, and stuff like that, but make that an option. You know, maybe,
yep,
a player does different things. A stat tracker for the fantasy football people.
Yep.
And also lower the ticket prices, because you lower the salaries of the players, they're not going to go anywhere. We don't have to worry about a KHL type of situation where they're going to boot to another league. There's nowhere else to go. We're the only league in the world. You know, they're going to play for lower salaries, or maybe make it a performance-based salary. You get a certain amount of touchdowns, you get a certain amount of money. You know, instead of these guys making $5 million, and you know, not pulling their weight.
Yeah, but let me stop you there for a second, Christopher. Keep in mind, what drives the salaries and what really funds the salaries is the TV revenue. That's where the bulk of the money comes from. You know what I mean? So I don't know that there's a correlation between ticket prices and player salaries. I think ticket prices are a strict function of demand. If the demand is there, they'll find the price point that they can sell the most tickets and make the most money, all these teams, all 32 teams. I don't think the ticket prices have a whole lot to do with the salaries.
Well, in that case, then, you know, then if they want people to get to the stadium, then you got to give them those options, you know, and
yeah.
Maybe have up to a family zone where I have a 7-year-old girl. I'd love to bring her to the Bills game. One thing is that I can't afford a $50 ticket. And the other thing is, yeah, there's a bunch of guys drinking. Make a family zone.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah,
thanks
and the
lot,
Bills
man.
Do. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for calling, Christopher. Bills do have the family zone, as you know. It's a limited seating section. We talked about this last night, too, the ways they try to improve the game day experience. And I do think you're seeing around the league that the teams are maybe more sensitive than ever now as far as ticket prices and what the market will bear. Because you're right, you have to enhance the in-game experience. What you talked about with the replays and with servicing fantasy football fans, that's big. And that's why do you think they're putting in two new scoreboards at Ralph Wilson Stadium, HD video scoreboards? And I think there's provisions in there for a kind of a continually updated fantasy football stats from around the league on one of the information boards. So that's why, because they know they've got to cater to fans who are there to watch the game and fans who want to keep track of their fantasy team or maybe get your – I'd like your idea about a different angle available via tablet. And, oh, by the way, in the renovation currently underway at Ralph Wilson Stadium, there are going to be provisions in place for enhanced Wi-Fi. They know they've got to beef up the Wi-Fi so that people can access what they want, mostly, I believe, you know, on their phones, but maybe tablets as well. They're thinking, they're trying you'd hate to see the NFL, you know, be played on TV in front of empty stadiums. I know that's a big concern of teams all over the league. You'd hate to see that happen. Our thanks again to Rich Deitz of SI.com and Sports Illustrated. Highly recommend his article today at the MMQB website and his weekly stuff, Media Circus, which doesn't always deal with the NFL, but certainly keeps you abreast of what's going on in sports media around the country. A big story today deals with the Washington Redskins, with the ruling coming from the U.S. A trademark office that the Redskins' name can no longer be protected by the U.S. Patent Office. We're going to talk about that when we return. We're going to talk with Joel Barkin, who is a representative and a spokesman for the Oneida Nation, here in upstate New York. He'll be joining us on the line in just a few minutes. So we got a lot more to come here tonight. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live tonight at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by NOCO here until 9 o'clock tonight. And we got a few minutes left. You want to call in and talk about anything you've heard tonight, including the question we talked about earlier on tonight, the Bills no-huddle offense. Should they keep it, go with it again this year? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Let's squeeze in a call here from Craig in Toronto. Hi, Craig. Welcome. You're on the air. What's on your mind tonight? Hello, Craig, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Craig. Craig, last chance. Is he gone? I believe he's gone. Craig, are you there? Craig? All right, enough of Craig. He had something to say but couldn't hear us. Got to be able to hear us in order to get on the air. Hey, if you'd like more on what went on here at Bills minicamp today, you can check our website, buffalobills.com. Chris Brown and I have Bills Roundup with some thoughts from some of the players involved, C.J. Spiller and Eric Wood and offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, all of it up there on buffalobills.com. Also, the entire press conference. You heard my sit-down interview with Nathaniel Hackett earlier on in the show, but the entire press conference with Nathaniel Hackett is also up there in video form at buffalobills.com. And we'll be covering the mini camp again tomorrow, the third and final day of the three-day Bills mini camp tomorrow. Practice scheduled to go at 3:15, but haven't gone at 3:15 yet this week, so we'll wait and see. But it is scheduled to go at 3:15 tomorrow, and we'll have some talk about that on the show tomorrow night, as well as coverage at buffalobills.com. Well, today in Washington, a major story. The U.S. Trademark Trial and Appeal Board canceled six federal trademark registrations owned by the Washington Redskins NFL team, ruling that the term Redskins was, quote, disparaging to a substantial composite of American Indians when they were granted between 1967 and 1990. The team is going to appeal the ruling. It does not mean they cannot use the name anymore. They will appeal. And even if even though they may not retain their federal trademark rights, they will have some protection under common law, I guess. Others could potentially, though, use the team's name and logos to sell merchandise without any repercussion, at least from the federal standpoint. It's been an issue that's gone on over the last several years and has really picked up intensity over the last several months thanks to the efforts of several different groups, including the Oneida Indian Nation, right here in upstate New York, right down the thruway. On the line with us live right now is a spokesman for the Oneida Indian Nation, Joel Barkin. Joel, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me.
Give us your thoughts on the ruling today by the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board. What does it mean?
Well, it's very significant in the sense that you have the federal government on record now saying that this is a racial slur that is not worthy of getting a federal patent. And it really supports what we've been saying all along, which it is that it is completely inappropriate for a NFL team to be marketing and profiting from a dictionary-defined racial slur. And, you know, I want to just make one thing clear. The nation has been a huge supporter of the NFL, including the Buffalo Bills. And,
yep.
And I think that for many years, the nation has supported the Buffalo Bills in the sense because it believes that the Buffalo Bills represents really what's great about the NFL and bringing communities together and not being a divisive force. And the term Redskins is really the opposite of that. And what we have been saying all along is that for the NFL to truly be the unifying force that it purports to be, you know, it can't be marketing a dictionary-defined racial slur.
People will ask, and I will ask now, what's the difference between the term Redskins and Kansas City Chiefs, Atlanta Braves, Cleveland Indians? Is there a difference?
Yes, there is a difference. And as you know, we've been very clear about saying that there is a difference. The term Redskin is a dictionary-defined racial slur. Just think about it. It's, you know, you're referring to skin color. And this is a word that we know objectively, historically, has been used as a disparaging term. It was a word that was screamed at Native Americans as they were being ripped off their lands. It's a word that was being screened at Native Americans when they were being put in reservations. So, you know, it has a very, very, very bad history, unlike some of these other terms. And, you know, there certainly is a larger discussion that needs to take place about Native American mascotery, but the term Redskin really is stands alone in the sense that only this term is a defined racial slur.
Hey, Joel, I recall Super Bowl 26, the Bills played Washington in Minneapolis, and on the way to the game that day, and this is January of 1992, so 22 years ago, on the way to the game in Minneapolis that day, the media bus that I was on was stopped in traffic for a long time by a demonstration by Native Americans against the Washington nickname. How 22 years later, I mean, what's happened over those 22 years, and how has this not changed in those 22 years?
Well, I think you raised two important points. One, there are several people, that, including the team, that says, oh, this issue just came out of nowhere, right? And in fact, it's been going on for decades in terms of its opposition. I think what's different is really we've really changed as a society. You know, we now live in a country that, you know, has elected an African-American president, has, you know, that has a different level of mutual respect, you know, and appreciation for diversity. I mean, if you think, look at Cooperstown, New York, as you may know, in Cooperstown, New York, down the road from you guys, there's a high school, and they were the Cooperstown Redskins, and this was a school on their own initiative. The students came to their own conclusion that they needed to vote to change that mascot. In 2013, which is when it happened, it was inappropriate for them to have a slur as a mascot, and the kids, without any prodding on their own accord, voted to change the name because that's what came natural. We have a new generation of people in this country that value mutual respect in a different kind of way, and I think what you've seen really over the last year is is the issue is catching up with where society is and people realizing, yeah, it's completely unacceptable that you have this term as a mascot for a professional team in today's day and age.
Hey, Joel, just about a little more than a year ago, Washington team owner Daniel Snyder told USA Today that he wouldn't change the team's name, and his quote was, "Never, you can use caps." I wonder if that sort of had an opposite effect than what Snyder intended. Maybe it galvanized the opposition to the name.
Well, I think just about everything Dan Snyder has done has galvanized the opposition. And one of the problems, fundamental problems that the team, Dan Snyder, has suffered from is that, you know, he's tried to over and over just ignore that any opposition exists and that there isn't a legitimate opposition, and has tried to marginalize and ignore the opponents to this. And that playbook may have worked 20 years ago or even 10 years ago when he bought the team, but it doesn't work anymore. You can't shut out and marginalize voices in this day and age with the way the media works now and the way that people talk about race in this country and issues related to race. So I think they've really found themselves on the bad end of that and are learning. You know, this day of reckoning, they've tried to put it off for a long time, and now it's finally hitting them all at once.
Last thing, Joel, I know people, talk to people even today, who I do not consider racist. I don't consider them close-minded.
Correct.
But this does, the use of the name Redskins for Washington's team, they think is much ado about nothing. They don't think it's that bothersome. Don't see the need for kind of the discussion. What do you say to those people?
Well, I mean, you know, we started this campaign from the outset to educate people who didn't understand the history of this word and the offense, you know, that was taken by Native Americans. And it is, you know, every single major Native American organization in America has called for this name to be changed. So we understood this was going to be a process to educate people and the harm that this name does. But it's also, who's saying it's not offensive? You know, it's much
right.
easier for the person who's not being offended to say it's
right.
not offensive. And
right.
it's much to do about nothing. The fact is, every Native American leader in America and recognized organ advocacy organization in America has come out clearly against this name. There is no gray area. So those are the voices that really should be listened to, and that's what we've been seeing, that those voices are being heard, and that's very encouraging.
Here's the last question, actually. The Change the Mascot campaign that's gone on now for a long while, as you mentioned, does today's ruling, are we approaching critical mass as far as this thing actually being changed?
You know, I hope so. I think that, you know, we certainly are coalescing around a pretty much conventional wisdom now that this is an issue that is offensive to many people and should be changed. And it's really just the stubbornness of Dan Snyder to accept that fate that we're up against. And we think the longer this goes on and the more damage that is done to the brand, the sooner they will come to the conclusion that there really is no choice but to change the name.
Joel, thank you. We appreciate you coming on tonight to talk with us about it.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Joel Barkin is a spokesman for the Oneida Indian Nation. He is the vice president of communications for the Oneida Indian Nation. And the big ruling today by the U.S. Trademark and Trial Appeal Board, canceling 6 federal trademark registrations owned by the Washington NFL team, the Washington Redskins. They will not have federal trademark protection. Others could use their name and logos to sell merchandise, although either state laws or common law could allow the Redskins some recourse. The Redskins say, the team says, they will appeal the ruling today. So this probably is headed for maybe a protracted time in the courtroom, but it does appear to me that this is a significant move today by the U.S. Patent Office, the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, and it does appear to me that we are reaching critical mass, and it does appear to me that people are coming around to the fact that this does not make sense. We'll take a break, come back, maybe squeeze in a phone call when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Just a couple minutes left in the show. Again, our thanks to Joel Barkin of the Oneida Indian Nation. Squeezing a call here about this issue. John in Rochester. Hello, John. You're on the air.
Hey, John. You know, that patent, they took back the patent rights that the Redskins can use as far as the feds go. But they still have a possibility of lawsuits against anybody infringing on their copyrights through, like you said before, state courts and other courts.
Common law, yeah. You know what so occurs to me, though? I was thinking about this in a sort of perverse way. If I was an unscrupulous entrepreneur in the Washington area, I'd right now go ahead and start printing up T-shirts with that logo on it and just selling them, because the Redskins won't have federal protection anymore if they take you to court. You know what I mean?
Right. But I think in the state courts,
that's bad that I think that way. By the way,
they would have rights to sue. So
I'm ashamed to admit that I think that I thought about that.
It'd be a shame to lose that Redskins name. But I can see their outrage to a certain extent. But I'd like to get a sample survey of all the Native Americans in the United States. I don't know if a survey's ever been done like that. I know certain groups that represent the Native Americans are against it, but I'll tell you, I'll give you an example. The American Medical Association, most doctors disagree with the American Medical Association.
Yeah.
So I think it might be one of those things. I think
I got to cut you off, John, because we're almost out of time. There have been surveys. In fact, the Washington team released a survey last December that they claimed showed 71% of people, not Native Americans, but overall 71% of people oppose a name change, 18% support a change, 11% undecided. Joel Barkin in the United Nations say the poll was flawed. But you're right, and as Joel points out, it doesn't really matter what people who are not covered by the offensive name. Doesn't really matter as much anyway what we think. It is the aggrieved parties who are Native Americans. I think the time has come. My opinion, I think the time has come for a change. I know it's a longtime nickname, mascot in the NFL, but things change, and that should change, just my opinion. We are out of time tonight. We want to thank you for listening. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Mike Jafari, our engineer, Jay Harris, the producer, and the Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews, and we'll see you tomorrow, 7 o'clock, with another installment of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We'll be live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.